prosecuting devotees, and also we discussed the idea of the offense of maintaining material desires, and whether that's what's that about. Now, we also dealt with this particular doubt. Can my sinful desires or my anarthas ever be removed? And I discussed how that the way ultimately everything gets removed is that Krishna does it. It led into a whole discussion of how much we do and how much Krishna does. But what we have to do, basically, is beg Krishna, and then Krishna does it. We quoted this prayer to Prahlad Maharaj in the Sringadeva, appear in my hearts, and Karmashayan Randayananda. You see Bhagavatam class this morning? Karmashayan was the first word of the verse. Karmashayan Hridaya Ganti Badham. So that's specifically asking Sringadeva to remove this desire to enjoy in the material world. The other question that comes up, well, there are many questions that come up, but one of them that seems to sometime we worry about is the fact that I do all these things and still there's difficulty. I have to say to everybody that Krishna consciousness is not a process of fruitive activity. It's not a material process. In other words, if this were a material process, we could give you the algorithm, we could give you the formula, you go through it and you get the result. And just like if you take a chemistry course, they tell you do this, and you do it, and boom, it happens. Krishna, and people are assured of a result. The same with karma kanda. You know, you follow rituals very exactly, and it's there. You have to be a precision technologist to succeed, but it basically works. Even the Maya bodies, they're told a very difficult process, but you merge and become one in transcendence. But with Krishna consciousness, something else is happening. A reciprocation is starting with another person, that other person being Krishna. We get up to a point at which a reciprocation, we become eligible for reciprocation, and then you're dealing with a person who's going to do whatever he wants, as he likes. We generally know his tendencies. We know Krishna's weakness, actually, that he becomes controlled by love. We know that actually bhakti is transcendentally more powerful than Krishna. But still, ultimately you're dealing with another person. So people who want, you know, total assurance, follow the process and the result will come, there's no doubt. That's true, but our attitude has to be different. Our attitude is we have to gain the mercy of Krishna. So there's always this element in bhakti of the personal relationship with Krishna that develops, because when there's there's so much we can do, just like a Mayavadi, you know, by practicing Mayavad philosophy, they can come up to the boundary of transcendence. And they can sort of enter into the outer envelope of transcendence. But to go any further, there has to be some answering movement from the other side. some response from the other side. That's called mercy or grace. And some Maya bodies get it, or at least Brahma bodies, and some don't, depending upon their attitude toward the Lord. So this is one thing that we have to be aware of with Krishna consciousness. The other thing is, of course, is that this process, Prabhupada uses the term slow, gradual, and so on. The requirement has to be there of faith and confidence, but with the expectation of success. There's a verse from the 11th canto, two verses from the 11th canto, which they're not on this handout that you have. That this is the 11th canto, it's the 20th chapter, and this is verses 27 and 28. And this describes the beginning stages of pure devotional service. And it begins, jata shraddho mat katasu. This is talking about a person, the subject of the sentence is one who has, in whom faith has awakened in the descriptions of my glories. Jata shraddha. We're talking about shraddha before. So faith has awakened in the description of my glories. So this is the beginning, this is the qualifications that is there at the beginning of the process of pure devotional service. Jata shraddha mat katasu. We're talking about a person who is, faith has awakened, has confidence in this process of cultivating Krishna's name, Bhagavatam. Next line, nirvinaha sarva karmasu. The vinaha means is disgusted with all material activities. Sarva karmasu, disgusted. This is the other qualification. Has faith in the process and is disgusted with all material activities. Veda dukatmakan kama. Veda means he knows that kama, all material desires, Veda dukkha, that's the word for suffering, dukkha, atmakam, are of the essential nature of suffering. That all material desires are really based on suffering and cause suffering. So this is the qualification. Has faith in the process, disgusted with material activities, knows that all sense gratification leads to suffering. Parityage api anishvaraha. Yet, that api means yet, he does not have control over the process of renunciation. He cannot actually, even though he believes all these things, still cannot control his senses, at least not entirely. Anishwaraha is not a Ishwara. He's not a, he doesn't have the power to control the senses. So therefore, he engages sometimes in sense gratification. What does such a person do? All these things are there, and yet they slip, they fall, they have setbacks. So this is what Krishna says. Tataha, thereupon, bhajetamam, he should worship me. And then there's this word, pritaha, and be happy. Prita means in a state of cheerfulness or happiness. He should worship me and remain cheerful. Shradayalur ditta nischaya. Again, the word shraddha is here. Shradayalu. He remains faithful. And ditta nischaya. And his conviction is firm. Jushamanas chitam kaman dukho darakamsta garhaya. Although he has engaged in sense gratification, and he knows it leads to misery, he repents of such activities. This last word, garhayan, means repenting. He repents. Here's the translation in the Bhagavatam. Having awakened faith in the narrations of my glories, being disgusted with all material activities, knowing that all sense gratification leads to misery, but still unable to renounce all sense enjoyment, my devotee should remain happy and worship me with great faith and conviction. Even though he is sometimes engaged in sense enjoyment, my devotee knows that all sense enjoyment leads to a miserable result, and he sincerely repents such activities. Huh? 11th canto, 20th chapter, verses 27 and 28. I'll go back and look at the purport to that, which is nice, but I want to refer you also to Bhagavad Gita 3:31. That verse says, those persons who execute their duties according to my injunctions and who follow this teaching faithfully without envy become free from the bondage of fruitive actions. Now Prabhupada says in the purport, he talks about faithless persons who have no faith in Krishna, and he says, but an ordinary man with firm faith in the eternal injunctions of the Lord, even though unable to execute such orders, becomes liberated from the bondage of the law of karma. And now you can see, this next sentence, Prabhupada is actually paraphrasing the verses we just read. In the beginning of Krishna consciousness, one may not fully discharge the injunctions of the Lord. But because one is not resentful of this principle, and works sincerely without consideration of defeat and hopelessness, he will surely be promoted to the stage of pure Krishna consciousness. You can see where Prabhupada gets that sentence from. This is 11th canto, even though he gives no reference. That's clearly where it comes from. So it says here in the purport, the beginning stage of pure devotional service is described here by the Lord. It should be interesting to note that this is called pure devotional service, even though one still doesn't have control over the senses. Nevertheless, he's practicing pure devotional service. Because according to the definition of pure devotional service, one should be free from ulterior motives. In other words, one motivation has to be pure. Free from karma and jnana, the desires. If I am performing pure devotional service for the sake of attaining love for Krishna, not for the sake of fruitive ends or for material knowledge, then actually I'm on the path of pure devotional service. Even though I may have those desires, still that's not why I'm performing devotional service. So that's why it says the beginning stage of pure devotional service is here described by the Lord. A sincere devotee has practically seen that all material activities lead only to sense gratification, and sense gratification leads only to misery. Thus the devotee's sincere desire is to engage 24 hours a day in the loving service of Lord Krishna without any personal motivation. The devotee sincerely desires to be established in his constitutional position as the Lord's eternal servitor, and he prays to the Lord to elevate him to this exalted position. See, that's pure. That's pure. The word Anishwara indicates that because of one's past sinful activities and bad habits, one may not immediately be able to extinguish the enjoying spirit. That's most of our condition. If we were raised properly, maybe that past wouldn't be there, but most of us were not raised very well. If we're from the West especially, there's a morass of bad habits. It will take time for these things to become eradicated. So Anishwaraha, the enjoying spirit, will remain there. Even though I know better, it's still there. The Lord here encourages such a devotee not to be overly depressed or morose, but to remain enthusiastic and go on with his loving service. So this is the point when it says Prita, he's cheerful. It doesn't mean, oh, I just blow it off and go on being an idiot. No, because it also says he repents. He's disgusted with these activities. Doesn't want to do them. When it happens, he's sorry. But at the same time, he doesn't become in the state of hopelessness or despair. Because the determination is proper, and one should go on in this way. With a dridha nishchaya, steadfast conviction. And await the Lord's mercy. So this is the advice that's given to us. We see other places also that one should not become overly deflected from the path just because of some difficulties or some setbacks. We have to keep going nicely in this way. The main thing that we have to be, as I said before, the sharalata, this honesty, this transparency. If we do not come to the clearing stage and remain on the offensive stage, then different kinds of pathologies, individual pathologies and social pathologies develop. And I mentioned the story of Ramachandrapuri from Ansha 8. And from there you can get an analysis of aparad, I mean the stage of offensive chanting. See, Ramachandrapuri committed a big offense. On the major thing, he was a failure. You may remember the story that Ramachandrapuri and Ishwarapuri were god-brothers and disciples of Madhavendrapuri. So in his last days, Madhavendrapuri became completely an invalid, couldn't move from his bed. And Ishwarapuri was serving him in a very menial way. Like sometimes you have to nurse patients like that. He was just taking care of him. And the other one, Ramachandrapuri. Well, anyway, in this state, in his last days, Madhavendrapuri, who was really the first really to give expression to loving Krishna in the mood of Radharani with extreme feelings of separation. So he was chanting certain verses and lamenting that he had not attained Krishna and was in a what apparently looked like a pitiful state of anguish, of strong feelings of separation from Krishna. This is actually one of the most intense forms of ecstasy, but it has the outward manifestation of lamentation. So Ramachandrapuri came to see his guru, and when he saw him lamenting like this, he gave him good advice. He says, why are you lamenting? Brahma Bhuta Prasadatma Nasokchati Nakankshati. You should be thinking about Brahman. There should be no hankering or lamenting. He instructed him in this way about and Madhavendrapuri says, oh, here I am dying of grief because I cannot see Krishna, and this fool comes to instruct me about Brahman. I don't want to see your face. This was the history. So the result was, if you look at there's Ishwarapuri, because he remained a humble servant of his menial servant of his spiritual master. Ishwarapuri got the benediction of having Lord Chaitanya as his disciple. So he was the spiritual master of Lord Chaitanya. And then we see the story in Ansha 8 how Ramachandra Puri came and also tried to be the spiritual master of Lord Chaitanya. Because he appeared on the scenes and at Puri, and Ramachandra Puri went around and was very careful to notice how much everybody ate. And then he said, you know, there's something really bad going on here. I see that all the followers of Chaitanya, they really eat a lot. I've noticed them about this. And so in this way, he was criticizing all the devotees. And finally, he got his chance. He found some evidence that Lord Chaitanya had been eating. I think it was some ants or something crawling on the... So many ants, there must have been sugar here last night, sweets. And so he said to Lord Chaitanya, you're not setting a proper example. You're a sannyasi. You're supposed to be renounced. And because you are eating so much, so also all your disciples are eating so much. This is very, very bad. And so when Lord Chaitanya heard this, he says, yes, I'll immediately cut down on my eating. And he cut his eating down by a huge amount. There was a system. Everybody wanted to feed Lord Chaitanya. And he used to go around every day and take prasad at somebody else's house. If they were Brahmins, they would cook for him personally. If they weren't, they would bring the Mahajagannath Mahaprasad and feed him there. But everybody liked to feed Lord Chaitanya. And so he immediately cut his eating way down by down to one third of what it was. And everybody became really unhappy that Lord Chaitanya had done this. And they came to him and said, you know, don't worry about Ramachandra Puri. They said, this is his habit. He sits down with somebody and forces them to eat. They said, no, I've had enough. No, have some more. And then he goes and criticizes afterward. Did you see how much he ate? He said, so this is his habit. This is not to be taken seriously. And Lord Chaitanya said, you know, what he says is true. It's not good for a sannyasi to eat too much. He's given very good instructions. Like this. This is how Lord Chaitanya dealt with it. And so he strictly observed this sort of reduced eating. But then after Ramachandra Puri left, and everyone breathed a sigh of relief, gradually he went back to his formal habits and everyone was happy again. So, Ramachandra Puri, in a major thing, he had failed. He had committed a serious offense to his spiritual master. He presumed to instruct him, thought he understood him better than he did himself, and was apparently tinged by Mayavad philosophy, contaminated by Mayavad philosophy. But although he committed this offense, he never acknowledged it. He never acknowledged it. And therefore, he actually had no potency or realization in devotional service. Still, he wanted to be a big devotee. He also wanted to be known as the spiritual master of Lord Chaitanya. He was a godbrother of Lord Chaitanya's guru. So according to etiquette, he's the same. He's a guru varga, the same level as his spiritual master. And so then he went around and he's going to give Lord Chaitanya good instructions and all of his people good instructions. So, but notice that on the major thing, he had failed. But then on this minor thing, he became obsessed. So he had substituted this minor for this major virtue and became obsessed with that. And simply caused trouble to the devotees. Obviously, no one could do anything to persuade him. Otherwise, he was... You notice how a person like this is so rigid, you just can't get through to them in any way. There's nothing you can do except basically ignore them, which is what Lord Chaitanya did. And Lord Chaitanya showed that he just accepted him. What he said was actually, he was a fault finder, but actually what he said was the truth. And he was Guru Bhargava, Lord Chaitanya was just going to treat him according to the etiquette. But then when he left, everybody felt happy again. So this story illustrates what can happen, the long-term effect of not trying to clear up offenses. But here there was a big offense, or there's a big sin that somehow one has accommodated oneself to, and it has been outwardly compensated for it by, in his case, becoming a fault finder. So there's a case where these things happen like this. So if there are anarthas, just having these anarthas is not immediately the problem. Immediately the problem, the first problem is having them and not dealing with them. One has to really come to the clearing platform, and then progress will be there. So this is the system we have. That Srila Prabhupada has given us. If we actually follow his order and follow his instruction that he's giving us, we'll make progress in Krishna consciousness. And you can see with Ramachandra Puri, you know, how miserable everybody's life got. And imagine a society where there's 30 or 40 of those types wandering around. I've been in temples, you know. It affects the relationships with devotees. This is a compensation. This is an unhealthy way of dealing with anarthas. You still want to think of yourself as a good devotee. Inside, you know, you failed in some major respect, so you substitute something else for it. And you substitute collecting money for preaching Krishna consciousness, and you erect a whole system of illusions. So this proper sadhana of becoming free from anarthas, cultivating the holy name, following the process, as Prabhupada said, is cooking with fire. That has to be taken up very seriously. At least then we will be on the holy, the Nama Bas will manifest, chanting that's almost defenseless. And of course we talked about how to begin on that platform. If we think that we have offenses we don't know about, we haven't acknowledged, that may be there. But one has to take oneself into the clearing stage by starting with inattentiveness, and then gradually we'll be empowered to deal with all the other offenses we may be committing. When Lord Chaitanya came, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he's coming as a devotee. This is a very significant fact. When Srila Prabhupada was interviewed on television in Gainesville, Florida, which he called an obscure corner of the world, he was asked by the interviewer. The interviewer said to him, you know, in our country, we're not without religion. That you see in many, many places, you know, we have churches and temples everywhere. So we have lots of spiritual institutions and spiritual instructions. But still, you're coming here as a missionary. So you must think that there's something that you have to offer that we don't have. What is it? And Prabhupada's first reaction was to kind of not directly deal with the question. He said, yes, and you do have many churches, and I've been invited to speak, and then it's been very nice he said like that. because he really didn't want to criticize. But the man persisted. He said, still, you must think that you have something special to offer that we don't have. Well, what's special about what you have to do? And Prabhupada, he replied by saying, this Krishna consciousness movement is most authorized. And then he explained what he meant. He said, in this television station, you're the head person. I don't think he is, but anyway, but that's how Prabhupada, you're the head person. So if somebody has to receive some directions or instructions, if you personally give that instructions, then it is most authorized. So similarly, God himself is coming and showing how to be a devotee. So this is most authorized. That was his answer. So that's a really good fortune, that Krishna himself is showing, demonstrating how to be a devotee. Not only that, Lord Chaitanya is Krishna's tribute to devotional service. He thinks being a devotee is so nice that it's better than being God. He'd rather be in that position. So that's how much he thinks of devotees, that he'd like to do it himself. And so then when he does it, we get the benefit of everything that he does. And Shishastika prayers of Lord Chaitanya, I really want to recommend this is something that I really discovered. One of those things you've known for a long time but didn't really discover it yourself until at this time in Kartika. Because these are Lord Chaitanya's own expression of what happens when one chants the holy name, the Sankirtan. I handed out this little sheet of paper where there's an analysis by Bhakti Siddhanta, who breaks it down into the different levels. And it certainly is progressive. But what the Shishastika does is establish the mood in which one should chant the holy name. Moods, I guess. There's a variety of moods. But it's the emotional atmosphere for chanting the holy name and for cultivating the holy name. And certainly, everything that you need to know is, in a sense, already in here. And many temples that we chant this in the morning before japa. Some temples do that. But these Shishastika requires, I think, some deep meditation. That's why I found this commentary to be especially useful. And although it starts with the beginnings of devotional service, the second one really describes the very beginning stages, that one realizes one's ineptitude to take up the chanting, and one has realizations of the nature of the offenses. One cultivates humility in the proper mood. One then becomes disgusted with all material desires. The first four are really the beginning stages of chanting. Then the fifth one, Ayinanda Tunuja Kinkaranam. Here, actually the stage of one's realizing one's spiritual nature, at least as a jiva. The sixth one, which describes tears flowing from the eyes and the voice being choked and the hair stands in end. Now we're at the stage of bhava. Then the seventh, yugayitam nimishena, strong feelings of separation, devastation practically. Shunayitam jagat sarvam, the whole world is like a void. And then the final one of absolute and full surrender. Again, speaking in the mood of Radharani. All of these are relevant, even in the beginning stage. At least my own. I hate to talk about these because, in one sense, I feel that they're way over my head. But on the other hand. What I do know is that even in the beginning, all of them are relevant. Even the ones that stay at very advanced stages. And each one of them has a mood and an emotion. And I think that at least I discovered that I was doing 64 rounds a day. And in the morning before I'd start, I was rereading this book again and again, and learning the Shishastika very well, so I could go through them very nicely in my mind. And then I discovered that while I was chanting, when my mind would get diverted, it would often divert. Something pops into your head. What would pop into my head is some words or phrase from the Shishastika. And I found when that happened, it took my mind right back into the Maha Mantra. And in a way, a little bit enriched. That for example, I would simply be chanting, and all of a sudden, Ayi Nanda Tanuja would come into my head, you know. And then, I don't know, for some reason, that Ayi, you know, you know, one got the feeling of this appeal, this begging the Lord, Kinkaranam Paditam, I am your fallen servant. And Vishame Bhavambudo, Vishame means rough. This rough ocean of material existence, I'm here. I'm here. And here is very interesting, and one remembers what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, which is very interesting. He says, Patitamam Vishame Bhavambudo. He starts his commentary, he says, is it proper for a sadhaka who has taken shelter of the holy name to discuss the miseries of material life he has to experience? To dissipate this doubt, Lord Chaitanya has composed this shloka. So Vishameva Vavasa is discussing his miseries. This is this horrible ocean of material existence. It's okay. It's okay. And so, somehow or other, just by remembering these different Shishastika prayers and the sort of emotional attitudes that are built into them, I think it helps put us in the proper frame of mind for cultivating the holy name. Before this, I always look at them as sort of the philosophy about the holy name, but they're much more than that. It's like chanting the holy name while taking a guide, but the guide is the one that kind of forms and instructs our feelings and our moods. It's very hard to talk about emotions because they're not rational. They're feelings. They're not thoughts. And we want to develop feelings of Krishna consciousness, yet at the same time, we're such warned against having the wrong feelings, or mistaking material feelings for spiritual feelings. So the guide for the feelings is here in this Shastika prayers, given to us by Lord Chaitanya. And if you read in the last chapter of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it sometimes describes that when Lord Chaitanya utters the third verse, how he came overwhelmed with feelings of humility. So you can see that for Lord Chaitanya, each verse is an expression of a particular mood or feeling. Even the ones that are maybe beyond our level of attainment, like the sixth one, maybe we're not, this, in the way it describes bhava, nayanam galab asudarya. But it's in the future tense, bhavishyati. So we can actually enter into the because it's good to actually desire higher stages of perfection. And the emphasis is not so much on these physical symptoms, nayanam, vadanam, pulikar, the eyes flowing with tears, the voice becoming choked, the hair standing on end, but the punch is tava nama grahane bhavishyati, from nama grahana, from, you know, perceiving your name, grabbing a hold of your name. This is what should happen. Even the seventh one, yugayitam nimishena, this is describing the devastation of separation. We understand that feelings of separation is a very, very advanced stage of ecstasy from Srimati Radharani. Yet this is also relevant in the beginning, because even in the beginning, if one begins to get a little just experience of Namabhas, you will begin to feel regret for not seeing Krishna. This is a form, this is the early form of feelings of separation. Or I explain to you, sometimes one feels really grief that one is turned away from Krishna. That grief is the beginning of feelings of separation. And at a more advanced stage, you will evolve into that ecstasy. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says this. There's an analysis from the Nectar of Devotion, where there are different kinds of Vipralamba. They've been divided into different categories. Purvarag, Mana, Travasa, and Purvarag means the feeling of separation before one has met Krishna. Mana, the feeling of separation when Radharani becomes angry at Krishna, offended by him, and she withdraws. That's another form of feeling of separation. Another one, having met and then being separated. That's another form of feeling of separation. But the one, Purvarag, means the feeling of separation before one has met Krishna. She's heard about him. Or like when Rukmini writes that letter to Krishna to come and kidnap him before she has to marry Shishupal. No. I've heard about your glories, you know, that's Purvarag. So here's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. The word yugayitam is simple and direct. Like each eye, blink of an eye, seems to me like one whole yuga has passed. Yugayitam, it's simple and direct. The phrase Govinda Virahina expresses deep feelings of separation. It's a yuga.
Yuga is 12 years?
No, I don't know why it's translated there. It's translated different ways, but a yuga, yugayitam, I think it's just like a great millennium, like a long period of time. I don't know why. Anyway, long period of time. Here in this place, Prabhupada says appearing like a great millennium. But anyway, a moment like a very long time. Maybe the more deep the feeling of separation, the longer the time. He says, self-realized rasika devotees, have divided Vipralamba, the mood of separation, into Purva Rag, Mana, Pravasa, and so on. And then he says this, yet the recondite import, recondite means, deep, hard to understand, lodged deep within this shloka, composed by Lord Chaitanya, is that the devotee living in this world need only relish the separation of Purva Rag. In other words, that, for example, describes the six Goswamis. Prabhupada said they went to Vrindavan, where is Krishna, where is Krishna? And then Prabhupada says, famous line, but they never found him. That's Purva Rag. So even in very beginnings, if you just remember Govinda Virahena, you can feel feelings of separation from Krishna. I'm in Maya, I can't see you, I'm so full of offenses. It will take that form. That's not the advanced rasika levels of separation, perhaps, but that's the way to go. So all I want to say is that even these very advanced shlokas are relevant even on very lower levels, not just as something that's going to happen in the future, but also has a tinge of it now. Just like, for example, in the very beginning of Krishna consciousness practice, you're just in the stage of sadhu sangha. There's some ruchi, there's some asakti. It's there in the beginning, but in a small degree, and later on they become prominent. So similarly, even these advanced ones. And the last one also, this unconditional surrender to Krishna. He can do whatever he wants. And here, it's very interesting. I went over with Gopi Pranadana some of the meanings of these words. Here it says, again, the speaker here is speaking as a gopi. Aslishava Pararatam Pinastumam. Pararatam means somebody who's fallen at the feet, or devoted to the feet. Pararatam. Embrace me, or kick me aside. One or the other. Adarshanam Marmahatam Karotiva. Adarshanam means by not appearing before me. And it's usually translated as it is here, broken-hearted. But the word marma is a technical term in the military arts. It means those points of your body that if you're wounded there, it's fatal. You know, like archers will have a place, you know, where to shoot for. Or in judo, so if you hit the guy here or here, he's dead, right? Those points are called marma. Marma hatam, wounded in these places by not appearing before me. And then he says, he can do whatever he wants because he's a playboy, a debauchee. You know, he just does whatever he wants. I can't expect him to be faithful to me. But Matrananatha is still my only Lord and Naparaha, and there's no one else. So this also is the unconditional nature of a love for Krishna, and this is the mood of Krishna prema. But even in the beginning, one should understand this feeling. So anyway, I recommend very highly the Shishastika prayers. And it was interesting to find out that if you kind of steep your mind in them, you know, pickle your brain or something in the Shishastika prayers, when you chant, it makes it easier to concentrate because if something pops into your head, it'll be from there and it'll take you right back into the holy name instead of taking you away. So I thought that was a very useful tool. And one thing also is that the Shishastika prayers was such a boost for chanting, that it also really deepened my appreciation for Lord Chaitanya, just because he's the person that wrote these. I mean, I became very, very grateful. I still am very, very grateful that somebody has actually written these things down, taken these things and put them out in the world where people can understand it. It's just, it's quite remarkable. And this is, you know, when I think of Prabhupada's most authorized, here it is. I mean, Krishna consciousness, and especially what Lord Chaitanya has done, is so, as he used the word, recondite, you know, it's way out there, so far beyond most people's experiences. And yet somehow or other, in 8 verses, Lord Chaitanya has put it all right there. And I think these verses will just keep, you know, they take on a life of their own. And will keep on guiding us and directing us. And then, you know, you go through them, you go back to the first one, and then the first one means more and more, which it describes all the different, I guess you'd call the blessings of cultivating the holy name. Well, let's take a few minutes, I guess, for questions and any more comments. Yes? This one right here, that I'd probably get on a little tape somewhere, is the Shishastika, which has, it's translated by Sarvabhavana, and it has the commentary by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, called the Samudaya Bhasham. And also a little comments by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, which I found very, very compilation of verses. Which compilations of verses, you have to sort of get into every verse. It takes a long time to read it, so I'm just halfway through. But there's plenty of stuff for getting into the Shishastika prayers. Huh? He didn't acknowledge it, right. No, but the mood in which he's considered saintly is the mood where he's sorry, where he acknowledges the offense, because he's rightly situated in his determination. With Ramachandra Puri, you see a pathological case of somebody who's not rightly situated in his determination. Still, Lord Chaitanya treated him with respect because he followed the etiquette, but actually he was not rightly situated. His spiritual progress is blocked for a long time, because of not acknowledging an offense. That's. Then you can go on chanting for hundreds of births and not make any progress. Understand? Okay. Yes? The two of what? Yeah, sure. Yeah, sometimes we do. Yeah. I mean, I certainly, you know, if your feelings are material, feelings are very dangerous, and they lead to bondage. And some of us who don't like bondage think that spiritual life means we become immune, we become free from all feelings. We become very dry, we become afraid of feelings. But if you want to have personal relationships, feelings have to be there. So Krishna consciousness is about developing feelings, but the feelings have to become purified. So it's this very strange combination of very intense feelings and yet very disciplined. At least as we develop, then they become second. Then when they're pure, they're second nature. Then it's automatic. But, The Prophet said they become afraid of becoming persons again. People are afraid of being persons. Anyone who's fallen in love in the material world never knows that you never suffer like anything is when you're in love. And people who've suffered enough, you know, they say, I'm never going to love anyone again. Yes, over here. Any other questions? Yeah. Sometimes they do. We see plenty of people give up chanting.
Yeah, but you know, if a person ends up in faith, how
can
anyone chant for millions of years?
Oh, sometimes. Oh, yeah. Well, it just says that you can go on for millions of years. Or sometimes there's some mercy there. I don't know. There's some mercy there that keeps you hanging around devotees. Doesn't say that one does, but one could. That's all. You can chant for millions of births and not make any progress. Why? Because there's offenses you're not dealing with. So just mere chanting, mechanical repetition is not enough. Whether you hang around for that long, I don't know. Yeah?
There's offenses while you chant, and offenses out of when you don't chant.
Mm-hmm.
So mostly the offense, if I understand about the offense when you chant, is in the sense.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, that's right. That's the main one to work on at that time. You could do other things. You know, there's a difference between sins and offenses, in the sense that many offenses are mental. In Kali Yuga, there's no karmic reaction for a mental sin. But some of the offenses are mental. To consider the spiritual master an ordinary person, to consider the name of the demigod, these are ways you think. Just to think like that way is an offense. It's worse maybe if you speak it, but even thinking it means there's an offense. So if your mind is wandering, you could also commit many other mental offenses while you're chanting at the same time. Okay? Yes? The same thing as disobeying the order of the spiritual master. It really amounts to the same thing. If I understand who the spiritual master is, that is a representative of God, then even though the spiritual master has many of the symptoms, like grows old or speaks with a Brooklyn accent, you know, something that ties that person down to a particular time and place in the material world, still, this person is God's representative, and therefore what? That's what it means, represents God. And so therefore, if the instruction comes to the spiritual master and I disregard it, then disregarding that instruction is the same time as, well, I really think, well, yeah, maybe I have to follow him or maybe I don't. So those two things amount to the same thing. But just disobeying the order is thinking of a spiritual master as an ordinary person. It's implicit in any kind of habitual disobedience.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all sins are offenses, but not all offenses are sins. Not to have complete faith in the Holy Name is not exactly a sin. But it is an offense. Okay? Anything else? We have to stop because I forgot. You have to do some evaluation forms. You want to hand these out to people? What about that? Are we supposed to take attendance also?
Yeah,
we missed yesterday too. So, okay, go ahead and fill them out, and I'll be up here, and you can come in and we can talk some more. Thank you very much. I really appreciated your having you as a class, and helped me understand things better myself. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Where can you find this book?
Well, I found it on a book table in Vrindavan, from the Prabhupada Sanatana. You see, here's what's happened, is that this is published by Rasi Bihari Law and Sons. He's got a shop in Lloyd Bazaar.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets all these books that were published.
Yeah. Remember that shop?
Yeah, so that's where it comes. And then many books, ISKCON temples and Krishna culture catalog, and, you know, they get it from Rasi Bihari Law, because he does these reprints.
Have you put out a book here before? And I looked on the table.
Maybe it's just not there.
It's not there, no.
Yeah. This is full of very embarrassing, some of them very embarrassing. But listen to this. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the most munificent incarnation of the Supreme Godhead, vented more than 5 years ago in Navadvipa.
No, mistakes.
Yeah, there's a lot of mistakes.
Yeah.
It wasn't.
You have to that.
Yeah, but other than, yes, you have to kind of overlook it. But otherwise, it looks pretty good. Yeah.
Okay.
Everybody knows. They all go there and buy books.
Yeah.
You don't have to go into that. Yeah. You're going to come and see me,
I thought. I went, but you are taking a shot, and then so many people are arriving. I was sitting there.
I would have thrown everybody out. I was waiting for that.
This is one thing I was reading, trying to understand the reason. No? Because we see that history is teaching that so many times, so many brahmacharis, sannyasis, leaving the mass, goes to the guru, and they could not understand the essence, and somebody from outside would come understand. So what do you think is the obstacle for one who lives in this temple?
Well, sometimes they get a false ego, that's what and they become part of the establishment. And because of their false ego, they think we're the establishment and now we're successful.
So, like Prabhupada is really kind of the outsider.
Uh-huh, yes.
And you see in other places, other times, same kind of thing.
In the history, so many times this happened.
Yeah.
I was living outside for 2 years. I was officer in the Brazilian army. I was working outside. Mm-hmm. And I followed everything very strictly, very nice.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came to the temple, I found some obstacles. You know? I was trying to understand some of them. Is, for example, is it difficult to progress when you are inside the group? Because you have to walk the same rhythm. The same, you cannot go slowly or go faster. You know?
Mm-hmm.
If you do less, you are criticized. If you do more, you also criticized. Because the group is it's going everybody together. They cannot accept anyone doing more or less. No?
It depends on the group, but that can happen. Yeah, it doesn't have to happen.
I said this in the temple, and when I was in military academy for 5 years living together, the group, you cannot do, for example, a very good job, because if you do a very good job, the other one to beat you, they will have to do the same, huh?
Yeah, that happens with labor unions, too.
In history, sometimes, different things, anything can happen, it's more difficult to be introspective, and another thing is that also not so personal, for example, when at home, if you want to worship, you will put the seed, you every day take care, so it's much more personal than just going to the temple to listen to them. Then you just came, maybe not so attentive, you know, day to worship, prashada, you don't cook, you don't have the trouble to do everything. I don't know if you, did you live as a child before, or?
I joined, I was married.
But you lived in the temple as Grihastha?
Yeah.
Do you have in mind any solution how to avoid this problem and be able to progress in avoiding this
problem with the obstacle of the groups?
Yes, because it's to be in association.
Yeah, you can show me.
To live in the association is a very good principle, very important. But at the same time, there are some obstacles. You have to deal with them.
But somehow or other, I mean, people are different according to their temperaments. Some people, groups are harder than others. So you have to find out from you what's best for your spiritual progress. There's a general recommendation that you live in the association of devotees, because most of us require some association. And if we don't have the association of devotees, we'll have material association. Either we'll have material friends, or turn on the television, the radio, so sometimes association of devotees and also group pressure helps people stay more strict and regulated.
Mm-hmm.